It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. 5:30, we go around the NFL, how we do on our picks week one, plus a little analysis from every game. I got to watch almost all of them because the Commanders played at 4 o'clock yesterday, which means the red zone was fired up on the old TV. But of course, at 5 o'clock on a Monday, it is time for our Mondays with Michael in Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Michael Phillips, of course, of our sister station, 910 The Fan down in Richmond. He joins us now on the hotline. And Michael, appreciate you. How are you doing before we get into the game? How are you personally doing on this Monday?
I feel great because I didn't learn anything yesterday. We'll get into that, but I just feel like every thought we had preseason was largely confirmed, and it turned out a little worse than we thought it would. But I don't know how you could genuinely be surprised by anything that happened.
I actually very much agree with that. I am very much in the it was worse than I expected by a little bit.
Yep.
But it was not catastrophic in any kind of way. And it was like the things that went really poorly are the things that I are expected to go really poorly. So I guess the question is, Mike, what do we make of that? What do we do with that information? Do we just sit here and stew?
Look, the Jaden Daniels touchdown at the start of the second half made it a 9-point game. If you count two field goals, that it's a 3-point game when he scores that touchdown, which is a very different game than the one we're talking about where they never had a chance and they were blown out. And, you know, whether or not you want to count 50 yarders as sure things or not, if they had hit those two field goals, we're talking about a game that they're fundamentally competitive into the finish. I think we have a different conversation this morning. So that's the importance of special teams in the NFL. Welcome, Austin Seibert. Your work is cut out for you. But in terms of the defense, it was absolutely worse than we thought it was going to be. It was really, really bad, and it raises a lot of questions about, you know, where you go from here and what you do from here. And Craig, I am not here to answer those questions, but just to pose them out loud and indignantly, what do you do with that?
Well, I mean, in some ways, Michael, like, I don't want to say good because it's not like, oh, yeah, yesterday was awesome, but it's like, okay, there's a plan. We all, I think a lot of us, I should say, it's certainly I don't want to speak for anyone else, understand the plan. The plan is so far playing out with the flaws that's intended. I guess in that way, it's like, okay, at least there's not extra stuff that's bad. At least some of the stuff that we hoped is good was good. And hopefully with a little bit more rep or some more reps and, you know, cohesion that can develop is better. Like, and so in that way, I guess all of that information that we've talked about so far is good, question mark.
Yeah, you know, you can only bring in new players, but so fast. Now, well, you can bring in new players as quickly as you want. You can only bring in talented players, but so fast. It's a salary cap league, and it's a draft league, and they are allotted a certain number of draft picks. You can turn it into more draft picks, but largely speaking, you're capped in the amount of talent you can bring in any given offseason, and the amount of talent they needed was more than the amount of talent they were able to bring in. I think we all saw last year just the woeful inadequacy of this roster and how badly Ron Rivera's drafts had turned out. And so this year, you know, certainly they're putting in the work. They're bringing in guys, but they're not doing it quickly enough to make a difference. They're not doing it quickly enough that this is going to be right. Yet some people saying this is the Houston Texans this year, right? They had more to work with roster-wise than these guys have to work with. Now, you mentioned the plan. Nobody wants to hear about the plan between week one and week two, Craig. We got 16 more of these to watch. But you're absolutely correct that I'm not down on Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, or the long-term plan at all. If we want to go Cliff Kingsbury, if you want to hit that button, I do have some gripes, but I think they're largely unrelated to the long-term plan.
So I do want to hit on both coordinators, actually, because I I've had the chance to watch it all back on film, so my perspective is a little more adjusted compared to, I think, where a lot of people are, where even if they maybe will watch the film tonight because they're sickos, they have, you know, jobs, and their job isn't this one where they get to sit and watch the film all day and then all of a sudden, quote unquote, start work at 4 o'clock. Even yourself, Michael, who does the same thing I do. You talk into microphones for a living, because Michael Phillips from 910 Fan, who hosts the wonderful radio show MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon every day. His show starts at 10, so you didn't get a chance to watch all the film before your show started this morning. But what are your gripes with Cliff Kingsbury? And then I can tell you what I think of your gripes. I will gripe about your gripes, or I will agree with your gripes based off what I've seen. Gripe away.
And that's a good radio format. I like that. I'm going to steal that for future programming in Richmond.
Excellent.
You can't run Jaden Daniels 16 times. And watching it back, and I'd love to hear your perspective, I do think there were a lot of options or keepers. The one I'm thinking of is the one where he scored the touchdown and they called it back on replay. You are down 3 touchdowns late in a game that you are not going to win. And if you decide to make it a game, Tampa is going to be like, hey, they're making it a game. Let's score another touchdown. And so it's not a game again. So there's no scenario there where you're going to win that game, I don't think, late. And you've got your quarterback, you're stat padding him by throwing him into the defense, subjecting him to another hit on the goal line, completely unnecessarily, in my opinion. Now, if that's an option, I still am a no on that. I think Cliff Kingsbury needs to be the adult in the room. We're giving the ball to Brian Robinson. He's going to score a touchdown. I don't care that you're the first rookie ever to score 2 touchdowns and rush for 80 yards in his debut. That's not a thing we're doing. 16 rushes, Craig, is 3 more than RG3 ever had in his career. It's the same number Lamar Jackson had last Thursday in that Chiefs-Ravens opener when we were all saying the next day, or at least I was saying the next day, dude's not going to make it to the end of the season at this pace.
So I think that a couple of things, some micro, some macro. On the super micro, the carry late in the game, I agree with you. Just freaking hand the ball off. Like, you just don't need to get him a hit there. I don't care if you pull Jeremy McNichols in. Somebody else besides your starting quarterback who everything relies upon can take that hit in that situation. I am with you. I do think it was an option. I do think it was technically the correct decision to keep it. And maybe they call that because they think, hey, if it's going to be open, he'll walk in and he won't take a hit. Well, sometimes that's not how it goes, and a linebacker or safety scrapes over the top, and lucky enough on the execution part, he can power through that guy, but it's still a hit. On the macro, like the most macro, before I get to kind of the middle ground of this game overall, I do think we talk about running quarterbacks taking hits as runners in a very silly way. The biggest hit that Jaden Daniels took yesterday was in the pocket, and that is pretty typical for the biggest quarterbacks. Hits that any quarterback takes is they take them in the pocket because at that point they are thinking about, I am trying to be a passer. When you're a runner, you see the hits coming and you protect your body, and it's a very different kind of impact. Again, it's still impact. There still is kind of a wearing over time. We've seen it with guys like Cam Newton that were used as human battering rams that eventually like get really jacked up Cam's shoulder. But I do think on that front, like we have to be okay with Jaden Daniels being a runner, on some level, because otherwise he's not nearly as effective as a player, which brings us to the what's that level. I counted 7 or 8 scrambles, Michael. So more than half of those are not by design. And while I think a lot of them were actually good decisions to scramble, I do think there's a lot of those where if Jaden just does the either correctly reads the defense within the context of the play, or as it starts to break down, hits an easy check down, he can avoid some of those hits just by quarterbacking better, and that's the nature of a guy playing his first game against a Todd Bowles defense in the NFL.
Hey, he's not the only rookie quarterback who had issues yesterday. Bo Nix averaged like 4 inches per throw. It was, Caleb Williams was lucky that the other quarterback was like, I absolutely insist that your team win this football game. We didn't have the benefit of that in D.C. The other quarterback decided to go ahead and win the football game. You don't get to pick your opponents. That's how football works. That's rookie quarterbacking. There's a lot of them this year. There's a lot of hype, so everybody's going to be tracking them all year long. Certainly the offensive line, I felt like, did not help the situation overall. I think Jaden Daniels got a lot thrown at him by Todd Bowles, and you could probably speak to that more having watched the tape. But, man, that's a good defense that did some good things. When we talk about matchups, right, next week is a better matchup, both for the corners on defense going against Daniel Jones instead of these Tampa receivers, and a better matchup for the offensive line going against a Giants defensive line that I don't think is as good or as innovative as that Giants group. I think a lot of things added up into maybe making it look like more of a disaster than it was.
No, I agree. I mean, the Giants defensive line is stupid talented. I don't think that they're nearly as tricky to decide. Like, Jaden Daniels will feel much more like he's in the preseason against vanilla defenses. All due respect to Shane Bowen. That's just in comparison to Todd Bowles. Like, there are times before the snap that I just pause the tape and I go, what the bleep is this? Because, like, that's facing Todd Bowles. Is you're like, what's that dude doing there? Hey, you don't belong there. What are you doing? And then all of a sudden you look at him, he drops out, and then you realize that probably means someone's going to come from my ouch, and then you're getting hit. That is the nature of facing Bowles. But defensively for Washington, Michael Phillips with us here on a Michael Monday on the Team 980. Of course, this is what we do every Monday after the Commanders play for Not My Beat. So, Michael, on the other side of it, though, I think that's the side of the ball where fans go, oh my God, we're still doing this far more than on the offense. What did you make of some of the key issues they had defensively?
Yeah, and you know, I think that the late game runs, it looked like Tampa was kind of communicating its game plan, like we're going to run the ball up the middle, run the clock. When those are going for 11, 12, 14 yards, this was a demoralized, gash defense. It's hot down there too. Don't undersell that. That humidity is the real deal. Temperature is the real deal. You know, those guys are worn out. Johnny Newton wasn't there. So I don't think Payne and Allen have any long term.
Pop quiz, Michael, in the middle of your answer. I'm interrupting you. Who is number 64?
Who is number 64?
I believe his name is Sheldon Day. I didn't know he was on the team until I watched the film back today and they had who was on the field on the side of the screen.
That's Sheldon Day.
He must have gotten activated on Saturday from a practice squad spot that I didn't know he had. That's who replaced Johnny Newton.
Wow. That's not great news for Fedarian Mathis, by the way.
Well, no, he was out there with Fedarian, but they didn't, you know, after they traded Ridgeway, like they only had four inside, Newton being the fourth, and so he's out, and thus they brought up someone from the practice squad, and it was not one of the guys they had in camp. It was Sheldon Day, who they signed at some point in the previous week.
How about that? You learn something every day. It's been an educational program today. Sheldon Day. All right. Yeah. I don't think there's long-term issues. There were some individual plays you can cite. I want to throw a little bit of maybe a little pump the brakes, throw a little cold water on. You know, Jamin Davis got 14 snaps, and I see people saying, man, he needed more snaps. And I think they're remembering the one great play he had, which was a really cool play. He blew up the run. I think he's a situational guy. I think he's a guy you put in there when you know what the down and distance is, when you're not at risk of him getting caught out in coverage. I think that's probably about the right number for him. But it's just so hard for me to talk about macro the defense when you got two corners that got torched all day long. And I mean, that was the story of the game. If they give you even a little bit of something, I think this is – you know, add in the field goals, add in maybe one or two stops. This is potentially a different story we're telling. But for Jamin Davis, man, two penalties in one play, it's actually hard to do, Craig. It's kind of impressive.
You mean Emmanuel Forbes on the deep one?
I'm sorry. I was talking about Davis. Yes, Emmanuel Forbes, the face.
You don't need to take your cold water on Jamin Davis to go straight to besmirching falsely. Michael,
you used to have
integrity. What happened to you?
Exactly.
I do agree with you, though. The Forbes stuff is bad, and I think what's worse for him is I had written down in my notes not playing hard enough before that, you know, obviously I didn't write that after because he didn't play at all after. So, I you know, it's tough because I do think the pass rush has a lot to do with this, where they just everything was so easy for Baker. He took a couple of hits, but not many. And certainly, I guess I don't want to say easy because there's times where he scrambled, obviously, and, like, that was difficult, but it ultimately he made plays. And there's also times where, like, the first third down of the game, they bring a zone blitz and it doesn't get home. And all of a sudden, Dorrance Armstrong is stuck in space on Chris Godwin. That's not a Dorrance Armstrong issue, nor is that a corner's issue. That's a, hey, we brought a blitz and it didn't get home issue. And so what I'm really curious to talk to Logan about tomorrow when we take command and go deeper into it with his level of expertise and to kind of watch as the season goes on, Michael, is like, is it possible to generate pressure, or is this the level of test that St. Juice and whoever is playing opposite him is going to face all year long? In which case, yikes, bro, I don't want to be either of those men.
Yeah, right. That's the thing where you win, you lose. It's week one. You don't want to overreact either way. It just feels like some of these are problems that are not fixable in the sense of the bounds of this football season and the 16 games they're about to play. And that's what's really, I think, discouraging to fans this morning. Look, we'll make the investment. We'll watch the games, and we'll certainly watch Jaden Daniels learn and grow and develop. That's absolutely the number one storyline this season and the number one most important thing. But defensively, it just, you know, and they could have a good performance against the Giants because, again, it's Daniel Jones. The receiver caliber is less. The Daniel Jones caliber is less. But there's the sense that this is maybe not something that's going to get fixed.
No, that is true. Okay, I'm going to do something to you that your colleague Adam Epstein did to me because I was on his show today, and Adam was just getting saltier and saltier, and it wasn't because he was broadcasting live from a pub and possibly eating French fries. It was because his attitude was getting just saltier and saltier, Michael, by his own admission. But he's like, give me something positive to chew on here at the end of our chat. So, Michael, if I'm forcing you to give something positive from yesterday, shout out someone. Give me a positive here that you can take into Giants Week and be like, hey, if some more folks can join that guy, hopefully we can beat up on Big Blue because they stink. What's your positivity coming out of week one?
Ready for the positives and negative. Terry McLaurin wasn't involved at all, and he will be. And this is an offense that did actually move the ball all right in large chunks of the game. Two drives that, you know, had big chunks of field, and then, you know, you missed the field goal at the end, but the drives are good. A lot of scoring play drives. You know, the NFL average last year was 22 points per game, and they were on that, and they'll continue to be on that. And you haven't seen what Terry McLaurin's fully capable of. And it looks like Luke McCaffrey's going to be a regular, and I'm excited to see what that turns into over the course of a season. I think for the offense, there's no reason to be unnecessarily down. I think there's a lot of bright sides to look at. I thought Bobby Wagner played with intensity and effort, all those things you know Bobby Wagner for. But it was still fun to see that in a Commander's uniform, right? Like, it's still cool to see him do that and, like, be on the home team, you know, and in the burgundy and gold. And, like, that was cool to see a guy like that playing at that level, even in the midst of a losing effort. And Tressway's on this team, Craig. Tressway.
Tressway, number 10, still number one in our hearts. That's
always.
That's for sure. I will say with Terry, I feel like there was a plan to get him some shots, and Tampa was like, no freaking way. And yet still, the one to start the second half, he's wide open. There is another dagger play where he's running up the seam, and Michael, he is screaming wide open. And Jaden is looking, what looks to me on the all-22 end zone angle, I'm watching that helmet stripe going, buddy, you're looking right at him. Throw it. He could have easily had four. Like, just those two are completed. It's four catches for $150 and two touchdowns. And no one's talking about Terry today other than, man, that guy's awesome. Thank God he's on our team. I do think they need to force feed him the ball early. But I agree with you. Is like, there's enough on tape where I'm like, I feel like they know how important Terry is. They might have to crank up and realize, like, how intentional they're going to have to be about getting him the ball. But there were some stuff dialed up for him. And Jaden's willing to throw it most of the time, except for that one where he missed him. And so I'm kind of, you know, as bad as and unproductive as Terry was in the stats yesterday, I'm kind of excited about Terry starting next week.
I agree. I think there's a lot to look forward to. I think this is a big game, though. It's a sneaky big early game because Daniel Jones and the Giants offense, that's about as easy of a test as you're going to get for a defense. So I feel like this is, if that was, you know, maybe what the defense is going to look like against some of the better teams in the league and better offenses, we need to set the floor this week as well. And hopefully the floor gets set higher than maybe I'm worried it's going to be set right now.
Well, I will say, don't forget, because I don't want to jinx it or not mention it and thus jinx it. Daniel Jones turns into some, you know, Tom Brady-like figure against the Commanders historically. So I don't know if they got to wear the black uniforms on the road or something to confuse him. But we can't have that version of Daniel Jones. Also, speaking of personal vendettas, it just popped into my mind. I'm pretty sure Terry McLaurin hates Deontay Banks. That's a thing that's somewhere in my head from last year. Is like, Deontay Banks was talking a lot, and Terry was eventually like, bleep you, dude. My quarterbacks are terrible. And he still like got a couple of big catches on him and was like, if I ever get a quarterback, I'm going to murder you. And now he's got a quarterback. So that could be fun. Just a little something to put in the back of your mind, brain. And we can talk about it next Monday. That's Michael Phillips, everybody. If you want more from him, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan in Richmond, which you can listen to on the free Odyssey app. Michael, thank you for your time as always. And have a great rest of the week of shows. And I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, this is Michael Phillips, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. I do want to, real quick, Brian T. Beal on the YouTube chat, Anthony, is bringing up stuff that I want to respond to. So I'm gonna quickly, like a 30-second response to old Brian T. Beal. Keeping Terry on the left side is very vanilla, unimaginative. Brian, look at the camera here as opposed to the chat over here. Brian, left is a direction, not an alignment. What do I mean by that? Terry in this game lined up wide left. He lined up on the outside of a stack to the left. He was the most outer guy in a bunch to the left. He also lined up tight to the line of scrimmage. He might have been the most outside guy there because they just kind of almost lined him up in a tight end type of split, and there was no one outside of him. Technically, he is wide left there, but he's not wide. It's just you get a credit as being wide because there's no one outside of you. He also did line up in the slot at least six times per PFF on 30-something pass routes, which is about 20% of the time they passed the ball, he was in the slot, including a slot fade that Jaden threw him. He probably shouldn't have. He probably should have been a touch more patient, and he had Zach Ertz over the middle. But I also didn't mind the idea of giving Terry that shot out of the slot. So, again, quit always just regurgitating the thing that you see on Twitter, including, by the way, if I tweet it. Like, use eyeballs. Watch a little bit more. Did you come out of that game yesterday being like, oh man, Terry's on the left, unimaginative? No, you were like, wow, look at all the different formations they use. Look at all the places they put all these different players. Look at Terry sometimes lined up next to Olamide Zaccheaus, and sometimes next to Austin Ekeler, sometimes next to Zach Ertz, and go, wow, that's a lot of different stuff. They were multiple. Yes, Terry's going to line up to the left a lot, but it doesn't mean that they're not being that they're being unimaginative or vanilla. That offense is not vanilla. I refuse to give in on that one. Okay, that's my 30-second. That was probably closer to 60 rant on the Terry on the left side thing. Anything else you'd like to add, Anthony?
It was actually 113, but that's it.
Okay, thanks for counting. When we get back around the NFL, we go.